Welcome back to another episode of The Political Life During the Pandemic. Hopefully we are coming to the end of the pandemic. People are getting vaccinated and spring is upon us. And today we are going back to Washington, D.C. to talk. This may be the only second time we have gone back to a previous guest, Kristen Smith, the executive director of the Blockchain Association. We had Kristen on when she was the, I think, the first hire at, and she helped form the Blockchain Association and was, I think, the first employee. And now they're up to 7 employees. And clearly, blockchain is all over the news in many different ways. It is an incredibly exciting new industry, everything going on with it. And so we thought we would have Kristen back to talk about it. And so, Kristen, welcome back to the show.
Awesome. Great to be here, Jim. Super excited to catch up.
And I have to say, you are in your office and
have
the coolest backdrop. Are you in like a workspace or what is, it looks very active there where you are.
Yeah, no, we are in a WeWork in the old YMCA building in DC. And so we overlook 17th and Rhode Island. And we have we recently just got a larger space so that there were enough of our team that wanted to have a place to go every day. So we want to give everybody lots of room, lots of space to have, you know, be a little bit far apart, but still allow us to be in the same room and work together. So yeah, we are about half of us come in a couple days a week and, you know, the other half work remotely and it's working just fine.
Well, that's great. It looks like great space. And we're so glad to have you back. You had introduced us to Rod Shaw and we had a great interview with Rod Shaw. We really liked talking to Rod and hearing about his firm and kind of his career. He had some great ideas. He suggested some great books, which we mentioned to our audience, but so we always appreciate that. And so let's get caught up. Blockchain is all over the news. Bitcoin is in the news because it keeps going up and up and up. I don't know what the price is right now. And many other things going on. So how have things been in the past year at the Blockchain Association? You've gone from 1 to 7 employees. You are busy.
Yeah. No, the blockchain and crypto industry is, really starting to mature and come into its own. And there were some policy actions actually that happened last year, specifically some guidance that came out of the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency that I think really sent a signal to particularly institutional investors, but that brought a lot more interest and money and attention into this space. And we've also seen some of the crypto networks, these are the projects, the services that utilize cryptocurrency. Many of those are now starting to take off. And so there's actually a functional element to this, and we can get into all of that later. So all of that has driven a tremendous amount of interest, not just out in the regular world, but in policymaking circles as well. And I think we're finally starting to see some of the larger crypto companies in this space look to engage more meaningfully in policy. So yeah, our membership has grown quite a bit and a lot of our individual member companies are looking to hire policy people and open up Washington offices and, more meaningfully engage. So it's been a really exciting time to see the growth and the sort of realization that policy matters and to see the industry thinking really hard about how to get these issues done correctly so the industry can continue to grow.
And tell us a little bit more about some of the policy issues you've had to work on over the past year.
Yeah, I mean, the big one we've had to deal with are issues around anti-money laundering. There are, in the traditional financial services world, there are a lot of rules and regulations, mostly under the Bank Secrecy Act, that are in place that prevent anti-money laundering. And it requires these centralized entities to collect information on their customers, to keep records, and in some cases do reporting, to the Treasury Department. And what crypto networks do, and this is kind of the big innovation that, you know, was first through Bitcoin, but we now see through across multiple blockchains, is you don't need a centralized entity to have a useful service. So with Bitcoin, you sort of replace the bank with this peer-to-peer network. And that is super challenging for regulators because regulators like to regulate intermediaries. And so there's this really interesting, almost intellectual challenge of how can we get law enforcement and you know, others in government that need information, the information that they need when there isn't a centralized entity to go to get that information. So a lot of this, you know, gets very complicated very quickly. And, you know, if not done in the right way, can have some pretty significant unintended consequences. So that over the past, I would say 6 or 9 months, that's been our largest focus, sort of at the end of the Trump administration and you know, now into the Biden administration. But there's other issues out there too. There's always issues with securities laws. There's issues around how best do you police crypto spot markets. There's, you know, a bunch of tax policy issues. So and now that we're a little bit larger as a trade association, though I would say we're still quite small compared to most major trade associations, but we do have the bandwidth to be working on more of these issues in a meaningful way.
And so so with the anti-money laundering issue, it's just working through how best, and you don't have to explain it to us because we probably wouldn't understand it anyways, but how best to address that issue so that they can prevent that or have a way to look into it or whatever it may be.
Yeah. It's making sure that we don't just apply the old rules to the new system, right? We want to have the same outcome as the old system, but because these networks are a fundamentally different structure, you don't get the same effect. In fact, you get actually a pretty negative effect because it, sort of pushes it pushes the bad guys kind of into their own world where they can transact secretly and keeps the good guys in a super surveilled world. And that's not the type of consequence we want. But you're right, we could talk for hours about the details of how that actually works. You want to have parity with the old world, but you don't get parity by applying the same rules because you're applying it to something different. And that's the big challenge. And but we're having great dialogues with various agencies and the industry is really thinking creatively about how to solve some of these problems. So it's great stuff.
Well, it's kind of interesting because when we first spoke, I think there was a question mark as to whether or not blockchain would even be around in the future. And now it's, you know, you see companies, I think I saw the Tesla bought some Bitcoin, or you're just seeing more and more. And so now it doesn't seem like it's a question of if it's going to be around. It's a question more of, you know, how widespread is it going to be, and how is it going to be here? It's really the perception and reality of it has really changed.
Yeah, no, and I think, you know, Bitcoin is almost in my mind when I look at the crypto universe, Bitcoin is its kind of own special universe. It was the first crypto network. And Bitcoin's not going away. And there, the way Bitcoin was designed is there will only ever be 21 million Bitcoin. There will never be more than that. And I think as we see a lot of spending going on in Washington right now, you know, we had just passed this $2 trillion stimulus and now may have an infrastructure package on the way. You know, there's occasionally talk about inflation. I know I can't go to dinner with a couple of people at a restaurant in Washington for less than like $400 or $500 when you used to be able to do that for $100 or $200. You know, there's the dollar, the value of the dollar is changing a little bit. And I think that particularly like institutional investors see Bitcoin as sort of a hedge to that. And because there will never be more than 21 million Bitcoin. And that is a very, sort of scarce thing. So, I think we're going to see a lot more get into Bitcoin, but you know, there's other blockchains out there also. I mean, you and I, before this, were talking about the Ethereum blockchain. That's probably the second most widely used blockchain. It's, powered by a token called Ether. And what Ethereum does is it takes the same decentralized network principles that you see in Bitcoin, but it adds something called a smart contract on top of it. And so essentially Ethereum is a giant supercomputer that can record information, transactions, but you can program it to do all sorts of things. So we see a lot of innovation happening right now where you will take the base Ethereum blockchain and you can build other types of applications on top of it. And it's there's a tremendous amount of innovation going on there. But there's also other blockchains that have become very popular that, you know, have different types of speed or maybe different, maybe a specific computing function or a specific financial services function. And so there's a tremendous amount of innovation going on, and some of it is early stage, but some of it is not early stage. Some of these are starting to be used, and when you look at your crypto account and you see all of the different options of tokens that are available, you know, those just aren't meaningless assets. Those assets power a very specific network, and it's sort of similar to if you own a stock, that represents the value of a company. And so it's getting to understand what these underlying networks do that often drive, sort of the value of the given network. So it's super exciting. It's I think challenging for policymakers to wrap their heads around the idea that there isn't this company in the middle offering a service. It's this open source software. But I think it's starting to take off, and I think people will realize the value of this sort of alternative organizing mechanism in the years to come.
So Kristen, that was very interesting what you just said about earlier about the, so if I have a token, I have access or I'm part of that network. I mean, it's not ownership, but it's like I have a share or permission to be part of that network. I have to say, that's probably the best explanation I've ever heard for someone, a layperson like me, to have a concept of what a cryptocurrency is.
Yeah, I mean, I can give you maybe a slightly more concrete example because this is kind of the big thing. It's not just these tokens we're trading for the sake of it. These tokens operate within these crypto networks. And the best example, or maybe not one of the best examples, is the Filecoin token. And I think we may have talked about this last time a little bit, but it used to be, Filecoin was a very abstract idea for many years, but a couple of months ago, the Filecoin network went live, and now there are Filecoin tokens that are used as part of that network. So you can go buy Filecoin. But the reason Filecoin is actually valuable is if I have, say, a media company, or I have a large set of information online and I need to store that someplace, the way you've typically done that is you call up Amazon Web Services, you enter into a contract, and they agree to store your content for you. With Filecoin you don't need to talk to a company. What you do is you go and you purchase this Filecoin, and then you use the Filecoin to enter into a smart contract with the protocol, and the protocol finds someone on the other end who has excess capacity. Maybe they have a small server farm or something like that, and they conduct the transaction. And you know, the service levels, the duration, all of the elements that you might negotiate with Amazon Web Services. In this context, you put all that into a smart contract and it executes and pays the person who is providing the storage in Filecoin. And so Filecoin is in some ways a payment mechanism, but more importantly, it works with this open source software to ensure that all of the service levels are being met, and it automatically moves the transaction, you know, over time as those are met. And so this is, that's why Filecoin is valuable, right? Because it's not just some speculative thing that goes up and down. It's, there's a whole network of computers that are connected, and there are what they call miners, which are basically the people doing the storage and offering the service that are paid in it. And so it's very cool. And so if you can look at any of these tokens, and what you have to do is look at the underlying network of what it does. Like Ethereum is a giant supercomputer. Bitcoin is a peer-to-peer payment system. Orchid is a decentralized virtual private network. These are all things that you know, in the past you could only do with one big centralized entity, and now anyone, I mean, it's super open, right? Anyone who wants to participate, who wants to learn, can be a part of it. And so it's really cool, and it's providing competition, it's providing stronger, safer, more secure services. And so, yeah, I think when investors are looking at that, you really have to look at what does the underlying network do.
Interesting. So they're each a little bit different.
Yeah, they're all different.
I'm not sure people appreciate that.
Yeah, that's a tough concept to get across. It's just a totally different way of organizing resources and offering services.
And earlier you mentioned the functional element. Is that what you were talking
about? Yeah. Yes, you can buy Filecoin and the price might go up or down, but you can also take that Filecoin and get online storage with it, right?
Okay. So you now have seven employees, or there's seven of you. Do you have any in-house lobbyists, and where do they spend most of their time?
Yeah, no, we have a great team. So, you know, it's funny, there's no like guidebook for how to start a trade association. You know, you just talk to other people and you sort of intuitively figure out, boy, I'm spending a lot of time on this. We need more help in that department. But yeah, we've got a great structure today. We have a policy team, which is a group of super smart young people that can research and write and think through problems. And they really kind of help organize the industry around the positions that we take, which is important because we don't always know the position we're going to take. We have to think them through. And so they facilitate that. Then kind of as a second arm of the group, we have a government relations department, I guess you could say. And so we have an in-house, you know, Republican, in-house Democrat, and we have a couple lobbying firms on retainer, the Goldstein Policy Solutions and Steptoe & Johnson that does our tax lobbying. And they spend most of their time on the Hill. And I tend to spend most of the time at the agencies just because, you know, those are a little bit deeper conversations and, you know, I think require a little bit more of an in-depth strategy there. But yeah, I think we have the Hill covered as well as we can for a small organization. And then we have an industry affairs department that helps with membership development and member services and our events and things like that. So yeah, it's a little team, but it's great. It's been a lot of fun to watch it grow and to also, you know, watch people come in and learn and come up with ideas and things that I would never have come up with. So it's really cool when it's sort of starts to run itself. It's really satisfying experience.
And which committees on the Hill do you spend most of your time in, which agencies?
Yeah, so the Senate Banking and House Financial Services, and then the financial regulators, including SEC, OCC, and FinCEN, which is a division of Treasury, spend a lot of time there. But, you know, we're looking now on the Hill to expand that to include the agriculture committees because they have jurisdiction over the CFTC, which, you know, regulates futures and derivatives because there's more happening in that space. And we're also looking to do more with the tax writing committees because, as I mentioned, there are a lot of tax issues, and you know, the financial services ones have been the, you know, sort of most pressing, but we don't want to ignore some of these other policies as well. But no, I think, you know, at the agency level, FinCEN, and then when Gary Gensler gets to the SEC, I think that, you know, we're going to see some activity there because he's very well informed on the space. And I think he has some ideas as to what he wants to do there. So we've also found that, you know, I was telling people today, it's like you do all of these things to build this trade association and you think they're all important. But every once in a while, there's something that people from the outside really catch on to. And, you know, we had this big battle that I alluded to before at the end of last Congress, where there was kind of this midnight rulemaking, or I guess end of the last administration, I should say. But there was this midnight rulemaking that Secretary Mnuchin was personally very involved in that would have been really bad for crypto. And there were a lot of procedure issues around trying to get this rushed through. And I think the single best thing that saved that issue was hiring Paul Clement, you know, former Solicitor General at Kirkland & Ellis, and basically threatened to sue and at the Treasury Department. And, you know, it's something like that where it's like we went and found the best litigator we could find for this very targeted project. And we were able to win because, you know, they didn't want to have to deal with the litigation. And so these are tactics that I think when I was a younger lobbyist, I never would have thought of. But, you know, when you're sitting in a different seat and trying to look at the whole picture, you know, there's a lot of things you can do. And there are a lot of people out there that have a tremendous amount of expertise and very strong reputations. And if we can convince those professionals of our cause, you know, we can deploy them in a really targeted way when we have an issue that needs to be addressed at a really high level. So yeah, there's the, you know, sort of the peacetime, like getting out, doing the education. And then there's sort of the wartime where, oh, geez, we're under attack. We need the big weapon to come in and help us with this one.
And what was the, what were they looking to do that you had to try to stop?
They were looking to provide regulation of something called a self-hosted wallet. You know, the big innovation of these networks is that you can transact in a peer-to-peer basis without an intermediary. And they were the regulation was written in a way that really would prevent that fundamental you know, feature from being able to be conducted, which really goes at the heart of what these crypto networks do. And so a lot of it was because it was sort of rushed. There wasn't input from experts. And yeah, we were able to cause enough of a stir that they, you know, they slowed down the rulemaking and changed the pieces of it that they were focused on. And, you know, now we think we have a pretty good open dialogue and are going through a normal open process. And I think the result of it is going to be a pretty good policy, which is how the system should work.
When you first started the Blockchain Association, do you remember what your biggest concern was? And is that still a concern today?
Yeah, no, the biggest concern at the time were related to securities laws, because back in 2017, there were a lot of these initial coin offerings. There was a tremendous amount of fraud that happened as a part of that. And the need for better securities laws was pretty acute, or at least better interpretation of them. And I think that still, to a certain extent, remains an issue today. But there has been additional guidance that's come out of the SEC. There has been kind of a shift in, I think, just overall approach to of kind of like you were saying before, this is here to stay now. So we need to figure out how to do this. Whereas before it was like, this is a fad and this might go away. So I think that's important. And then we've had a lot of enforcement actions that, for better or for worse, have provided some level of understanding as to how the SEC is going to apply. I think we would definitely rather see, you know, something more concrete than having to, you know, look at all the different case law and figure out how to do it from there. But there have been enough success stories and examples of crypto projects that have been able to come, you know, forward without having who have successfully navigated the securities laws, that they're examples for others to share. And there's more certainty there than there was. But it continues to remain an issue. And I think if we got the right kind of policies in place, that would, you know, continue to go a long way towards helping, helping the industry grow further. But it's not the existential threat that it was.
And you're really actually kind of a startup. And how is your responsibilities in life different today than day one? Day one, looking for an office,
I didn't bother on day one because I could just, it was just me. So, in the beginning, it's just like the operations, right? Like you got to get the payroll set up and you got to get the lawyers to get the entity done correctly. And, you know, there's just a lot of sort of little things that, you know, I come from a Hill staffer background and a lobbying background. I don't know how to do any of this stuff, but you kind of figure all that out. And there's a lot of good people to help. But I think today it's really figuring out how to unify the industry is what takes up the most of my time, because, you know, I think like in any industry, but particularly in sort of the tech, finance, now crypto world, there's a lot of ego, there's a lot of ownership. And I think we've done a really good job because we have 35 organizations that are members of our association, which is a bulk of the industry. But there are some out there that kind of want to go their own way and they want to reinvent how to engage with policymakers in Washington. And, you know, my message to them has been like, you're not going to reinvent this thing you don't know. What you need to do is use the playbook that every industry uses and have people on the ground, have conversations, have a presence, and do it in a way that is helpful and unified, and there can be success. And so that's kind of the last piece that I think we need. And it's also a resource issue, right? Like little blockchain association, we have a $2.5 million budget. That's, you know, the same as the Valve Manufacturers Association of America, right? You know, you've got the American Bankers Association, according to their 990s, they're like a $200 million a year budget. It's like, okay, so we're trying to take on finance and tech when our budget is 1/10 of our, you know, the Bankers Association budget. Like, I'm not like, how are we, you know, we got to be really efficient with all of that. So, but the industry, I think, is starting to realize that they need to step in and they want to grow our budget. They want to help by having their own teams that we can coordinate with and work together with. And so I think, you know, in terms of crypto and blockchain lobbying, that 2021 is going to be, I think, a really big year to bring new professionals into the space that have great relationships and great strategic insights. And I talk to people every day that are interviewing at different places. And it just makes me really happy to know that, folks that I've known for a long time are looking to make a move and to get into the space.
Well, for a little association, you're doing pretty well.
Yeah, we're chugging along, doing our thing. It's a lot of fun.
And it's somewhat related. Maybe you're going to be like, oh my God, no, it's not. NFTs and Ethereum. What is going on with NFTs? Oh my God.
You know, it's funny. So NFT stands for non-fungible token. So, you know, Bitcoin is a fungible token. I can give you a Bitcoin and you can give me back another Bitcoin and I'm just happy that I have a Bitcoin, right? But non-fungible tokens are unique. They can't be replaced for one another. And so, you know, just sort of like people find baseball cards valuable or, you know, a first edition book valuable or an original piece of art valuable. In the digital world, you can have something that is an original that you can verify because you can go to the blockchain and be like, you know, this, picture of a baseball player is the original and it belongs to me. And there's a market for that. And they have proliferated in the past, you know, really just a couple of weeks, I feel like. I mean, they've been around for a while. But it's been really interesting because especially our lobbying team, when they're interfacing with Hill staff, it comes up all of the time. And but NFTs are important because you know, and before Bitcoin, there wasn't digital scarcity, because you could have that picture of that baseball player and I could send you a copy and you could send James a copy and James could send, you know, somebody else a copy. And all of a sudden there are four copies of this one thing. And yes, you can, just like you can make a poster of the Mona Lisa and sell the copy. This, there's only one Mona Lisa, and this is sort of the digital version of that, that sort of verifies the original one. And so, you know, there potentially could be policy issues around NFTs. You know, you could argue that securities laws might apply, or there may be anti-money laundering sort of issues that are there. And that's something we're definitely looking at and tracking. But, you know, I think for the most part, it's been really great, because it really has driven home this idea that you can have scarcity in the digital world, which is an important component of crypto networks.
As if you weren't asked about enough things up on the Hill, now you have NFTs on top of
everything else. Now we have NFTs, but it's driving interest. It's great. We've got a lot of outreach, so it's a lot of fun.
And how has lobbying been during the pandemic? Difficult?
You know, yes and no. You know, obviously you don't have these sort of random chance encounters where you bump into somebody and pick up information, and or you can go to an event and see 50 people and sort of be on the scene. But, you know, I'm in a situation where I don't have children, so I don't have to worry about schools and pods and everything that everybody does. You know, my parents don't live in the area. So for me, it's been great to develop relationships. And I usually about once a week, I'll get a reservation for six people, and I'll invite a mix of crypto people, people in government. I will have people over to my house. But what's great is, because no one has anywhere else to go, they'll sit for 3 hours at dinner and you can really get to know someone. So I feel like we have built some phenomenal relationships, not only with people that happen to be local in the crypto industry, because there are, you know, lawyers and developers and whatnot that are in the area, but people in government that you just, you know, they're happy to pay their own money to sit down and have dinner because they're happy to have an invitation. And it's just been a really great way to get, you know, deeper, more meaningful relationships with a small set of people. And so that's probably the best part of it. But yeah, you just miss out on that face-to-face interaction, as you well know, Jim, is so important and building, you know, long-term relationships. But I think that government has gotten more used to video calls and conferences. You know, crypto has done that for years, so that's something we always did. But yeah, I'm looking forward to the day where we can actually get everybody back together in person. I'm just not always sure if that's going to happen, but
yeah, it's hopefully soon. Hopefully very soon. Well, Kristen, it was great to have you back on, and great to hear about the Blockchain Association and how things are going. We wish you the best of luck in the coming year as you continue to grow. And we'll have to circle back in another year to see what's going on with NFTs and other cryptocurrencies and go from there. For our listeners, remember, you can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We're all over social media. You can also sign up for our Monday email at thepoliticallife.com. It comes out every Monday along with the show. And we hope you have a great week, and we will see you next Monday.